Hello, everyone, and welcome to From Tip to Tail, a podcast dedicated to animal welfare. This podcast is sponsored by Cuddly. Cuddly is the only crowdfunding platform built specifically for animal welfare organizations worldwide. I'm Bridget.
And I'm Sydney. We've spent years working with animal rescues and have seen such amazing innovation, strength, and heart.
Having this personal connection with rescuers has made us more informed, grateful, and inspired. We hope by giving you an inside look, you will be too.
Today, we're going to be sitting down with Cynthia Longpace, the owner of the Sunshine Fund, which is a Texas-based 501c3 with a mission to honor the memory of a special kitty named Sunshine by fostering, supporting, and finding forever homes for homeless cats and kittens. We were so honored to have Cynthia on to talk about her dive into rescue and the learning opportunities that have come along the way that have helped her grow both as a person and as an organization. If you like this episode, be sure to click that subscribe button to listen in on similar stories. Other than that, let's get started.
Hey, Cynthia, how are you?
I'm well. How are you guys?
Really great. Really excited to talk to you. First of all, I just think you have one of the cutest rescue names.
Oh, thank you.
It's just so sweet. How'd you get that name?
I had a little foster kitten. He was one of five kittens that came to me in the rescue. And actually, the rescue hadn't started at this point when I did get that little family. And two out of the five were really sick. One of them's name was Moon Pie, and one of them's name was Sunshine. And they were both sick, and I had them downstairs with me. And Moon Pie passed rather quickly. And I just put everything I had into Sunshine. I was like, you are not going to die on me. I was syringe feeding him. I took him to the vet. And despite everything I tried, he passed away on my chest in the middle of the night. And it just hurt so badly. And I just thought, I should have known more. I should have done more. I should have had more finances to invest more. And I just told him that night, I said, you know, your death will not be in vain, and I'm going to do everything I can to become better and to help more by gaining wisdom and resources. And so that's how the Sunshine Fund came about.
Oh my gosh, that is so heartbreaking. And I feel like it's one of those things too, like I think everyone in rescue can recognize grief is part of it. But I think it is so inspiring because I think in grief, you can have two options. One, you can let it defeat you. And the other, you can let it inspire you. I don't know how you do it. Because I think sometimes that might cripple me at least for a little while. But it is so amazing that you have been able to take that fire and that passion and really turn it around to help. I know right now you're surrounded by so many kittens that you're helping. Thank goodness for you. And thank goodness for that drive that you have that was inspired by that little life. I mean, that's incredible. Well, so we got into the name and you broke my heart already. So now, I'll be okay. But tell us then, it sounds like you were taking in animals and really working with them before the rescue started. So how did you eventually start the rescue and when was that? And how long has it been now? How has it been?
I started fostering. I was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2018. And the day after my first chemo treatment, I took in a litter of six orange kittens.
Oh my gosh.
And people would ask me, why would you do such a thing? You just had chemo. And honestly, looking back, I didn't have a reason why I did it. I just did it because someone needed to step up. So I stepped up. But it was the best thing I could have ever done because it took the focus off of me and what I was going through. And I knew they needed me. And these little guys got sick, of course, because that's what kittens do. And so I couldn't lay in bed and feel sorry for myself. I had a focus. I had to take care of somebody that couldn't take care of themselves. And so that's kind of where the fire was lit, if you will. And so I got through that. I started fostering for a couple of rescues here in Houston. And really, really enjoyed that. And then when the Sunshine incident came about, because being under somebody else as a foster, you don't have a whole lot of, I don't want to say control, but it's not about control, but I had parameters. And so that's when I thought, I've got to do more. And so in July of 2020, during the COVID, that's when I went ahead and filed for my company, and we're now a 501c3 nonprofit. And it's been, I guess, just over 2 years now. And man, have I learned a lot? Have I cried a lot? Have I rejoiced a lot? But it's been an amazing couple of years. And I really look forward to what more we'll be able to do as a rescue with the knowledge and resources that we have now that we didn't have 2 years ago.
Wow. I mean, that really is such a great story of, I have to ask, because people are going to wonder, how are you right now?
Cancer free. I just had my mammogram done a couple weeks ago, and I'm still cancer free. So praise God for that.
Congratulations.
I'm going to say this is perfect that we're filming this in October too, because October is, I believe, isn't it National Breast Cancer Awareness Month?
I think it might be. And if it's not, it should be.
I know. It is now. I love that too. What a kind of like a shot of reality too for people, because you hear it a lot with people who want to foster, people who want to get involved in rescue. Not that there's necessarily excuses there, but I do tend to hear a lot of people saying, I just don't have the time. You know, I have a lot going on right now. So I think hearing about you, hearing how you're literally battling something as serious as cancer, going through chemotherapy, which is incredibly difficult, incredibly exhausting. And you still had motivation to help other people and to put yourself out there to help animals. So I feel like it is a little bit of a shot of reality for everybody out there saying that they can't do it, because this lady did it, and she's, you know, you're doing incredible things and you made an incredible legacy out of it. Hopefully that's a little kick in the caboose that people need.
a little gentle kick in the caboose.
Yeah.
Right? Sometimes we all need a kick in the caboose.
True.
Absolutely. So we talk to so many rescues all the time, and so many of them have been from Houston. I feel like majority of them are dog rescuers. There's a lot going on in Houston when it comes to animal welfare. I'm wondering if you can maybe highlight, what is it like in cat rescue in Houston right now?
Well, I just attended a animal welfare conference. It was called United Rescue Conference, I believe. And I was talking to someone, and pretty much the way I feel cats are looked at are the stepchildren of the animal world. We get about 10% of the resources that dog rescues will get. Someone sees a dog on the street. Oh, you're lost. Oh, let me help you. And the dog will get the help it needs. Someone sees a cat on the streets and they see a cat on the streets. That's all they see. They don't see a cat on the street that could be lost, that could be hurt, that could be scared. I know that we're all in rescue to help the animals in whatever field you're in. But reality is in Houston that cats are like vermin. They're just, they don't get the attention that dogs do. And that can be challenging when you're trying to raise funds, especially when I have a situation like I just did a couple weeks ago, where I had a little kitten that was being kicked around by some school-age children, and he ended up with a little hernia. I say a little, it was a pretty large hernia, and he was 6 weeks old, and his surgery costs over $5,000. And someone said, why would you do that? And I said, why would I do what? And she said, why would you spend that much money on a kitten? And I'm like, because it's a life. When something comes into my rescue, my job is to help them. And it doesn't matter what it's going to cost, because they came to me. They need me. They need help. They need somebody to be a voice for them. And it doesn't matter what it's going to cost. The only time I wouldn't invest the resources is if helping them is prolonging any suffering. That's the only time we wouldn't spend the money.
It is so shocking, I think, too, because I know in this field too, there are so many people who are like, I'm helping those who are not being helped. And I think so often, of course, those are the dogs that are being overlooked. And those are the pit bulls and the chihuahuas. And by all means, I love me a dog. But I think too, there is this confusing mix of worth, right? And it's one of those things like, why are you helping this kitten? Well, because clearly no one else was going to. It is confusing to me because it almost feels like, I don't know if it's a matter of size. I don't know why people associate different worths with these different animals.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, I know, just even speaking from my background with a marketing experience, we see so many people interested and engaged with cats online and who want to help cats. And so I feel like this perception of, well, people like dogs more. I don't know that that's overwhelmingly true. I think people get that in their heads. Of course, we all hear all the time, like, well, I'm a dog person. I think there is that community of people who want to help cats and honestly don't see animals in the way of like some sort of speciesism, right?
Mm-hmm. It's such a weird thing too, like the concept of somebody asking, what's the price that you put on a life, regardless of what the life is. I feel like it is so common. I feel like we do see it a lot in rescue. Unfortunately, there's always going to be those people who will question whether or not what you're doing is worth the cost, regardless of whatever animal it is. But it's always been such a strange concept to me that that's even a question that gets brought up in rescue, because a life is a life. And like you said, unless it's going to prolong suffering, unless it goes against quality of life or medical advice, I feel like that's just not a question that people need to be asking. And it comes up.
Well, the sad reality, though, is that rescues rely on donations. Unless you're a self-funded and you have the money to do whatever you need to do, you are going to have to rely on the generosity of others to help you. And so there have been situations in rescues that I've seen where they don't have the funds to spend thousands of dollars on an animal. And sometimes those hard decisions have to be made from a pure financial standpoint. I don't think it's as often as it could be, because I do think that the rescues will try to exhaust every resource that they can, but just sometimes it doesn't come through.
When you were fostering, and also your experience now, do you feel like there are more general rescues? Are there less cat rescues, do you feel, in Houston?
I feel like there's a good number. I haven't ever done any kind of poll or research, but I feel like at least the people that I reach out with, we network together. If this rescue can't help them, they'll reach out to another rescue who might could. I feel like we have a pretty good, what is the word I'm looking for? A pretty good, solid group of cat rescuers. Now, where we do hurt are outside of Houston cities, like Porter and Cleveland and cities that don't have anyone to help them. And so rescues out of Houston are going into those areas to try and help the animals there, because they don't have a pound, they don't have a shelter, they don't have anything. And so these poor animals are just literally suffering on the streets. So there's rescues that are cat rescues here and dog rescues that have made it their mission to go to Cleveland and to take care of the stray animals there, which I'm very thankful for. It's not something that my rescue is able to do from the sheer fact that I have a full-time job and it's pretty much me, myself, and I that do the rescue. I'm short of my fosters. I do have foster people, but when it comes to intake, it's my decision, and who we're going to help is my decision. So it's just kind of hard for me to get out to outlying areas of Houston.
Well, not every rescue can do everything, nor should they. Especially when I think it does make space for people to specialize in certain areas and to really get very good at something. And then it does open the door then. It sounds like you have got a nice community of different rescuers that you work with that then you can learn from or transport with or do different things. I know there's this stereotype perception of cat ladies and personalities. I feel like I can say that because I fostered enough cats. But do you feel like you have a warm community and network within the rescue community that you can learn and grow and you will can work together? Or do you feel like it still has a little bit of competition?
I was hoping you wouldn't actually ask that question. I think it's a little bit of both. There are definitely rescuers that I work very well with, and we support each other and we help each other. And then there's some that do feel like it's a competition. And I don't know if it's the attention, if it's the look what I've done kind of attitude instead of we're here to help cats. There's been some that I've come across that maybe don't treat the animal finders well, or the owners who are surrendering the cats, they don't treat them well. And that's not how we went over helping the animals. And so I may not agree with what the owner's doing or why they're giving their cat up, but who's it going to hurt if we tell them no? You know, it's going to hurt the cats. And so it's a little divisive, but I'm hoping that one day, I was again at this United Rescuers conference, I made a statement that just said, I wish there was one place, whether it be one Facebook page, one website, one place where we can go and put our needs. We can go and say, this is what I've come across, or this is where my rescue is struggling, or, you know, ABCD. And then someone in the rescue community can come back and say, you know what? I've got four extra carriers here that I'm not going to need. Would that help you? And it would just be a way to unite and to be stronger together than we are apart.
I know it is so hard to talk about because we want it to be different. And we don't want to name names or anything like that. But it is hard because I feel like, and you probably see this too, is you kind of understand where some people are coming from. Like, yes, when someone surrenders an animal, it does make us sad. But also, we have to look at it in the grand scheme of things of better they surrender it than do something else with it. And I know too, even when it comes to like that, I don't know, mentality of, these are my donors, or like, oh, I am going to hold on to my cats because I need to get this adoption fee. Ultimately, it's a little bit sad because you know they're hurting themselves in the long run. I don't know that you can maintain an organization like that long term when you're just in it alone and then you're isolating yourself more and more. It becomes difficult and then you don't have a lifeline. And whereas I think if people come together, it's like, hey, some days you have plenty, some days you have less, and you all work together for the common good in the meantime.
There's a large, animal welfare organization here that I have been blessed to be able to transport cats with. They take my cats, I get them fully vetted, combo tested, microchipped, you name it, ready to roll. And they take my cats and they take them up north to Minnesota. And I get nothing. That's okay, because it's not about making some money, which we don't make money in rescue. First of all, there's no money to be made in rescue, but you can recoup some of your expenses. But anyway, without getting an adoption fee, it's straight, you know, you're going to take this cat and that's another life out of Houston, the way I look at it. But will I take every opportunity I can to transport a cat out of Houston? Absolutely. I have been also blessed to be able to work with a cat lounge in Austin that just opened in July. And I'm able to take cats up there and they live in this wonderful place and people come and play with them and sit with them. And enjoy their company and they can get adopted. There at that place, I do receive adoption fees. And it has made a difference in the rescue because it has pumped that money back in so that I'm able to help do surgeries and take in medical cases and those kind of things. So it all averages out, but at the end of the day, it's about helping the cats.
That's so interesting about the cat lounge, because I mean, we've all seen them springing up here and there. And as a foster, I think it is such an interesting concept because you get exposed to cats, and obviously so many of them have to be social and have to be, they're all have to get along with the other cats. So I feel like it's kind of this exciting opportunity to socialize cats with people and cats. And I'm wondering, how did you initially get set up with a lounge like that? That's pretty kind of fun and exciting.
It was actually, I mean, I look back at it and such a blessing. It's not even anything that I did. Someone who worked with another rescue that I had been transporting with as well, she was a foster for them and was good friends with the lady who opened the lounge. And so the lady who opened the lounge was needing cats. Obviously, you got to have cats if you're going to have a cat lounge. And so she asked her friend, do you know anyone with cats? And this person who really didn't know me that well told her friend about me and said, you know, you can talk to her. She's got cats and she's great. And she came down and visited, spent a day with me here at the house. And we went through all the cat rooms and we just worked together for several hours. And then she was like, you know what, let's do this. And so myself and another rescue that's here in Houston are the sole providers of cats for her lounge. And I still pinch myself because I think, how did this happen to me? How did I get chosen to be blessed by giving these cats an opportunity to find homes? And I'm going to piggyback on that just a little bit, but the lounge is such an amazing, magical place because people can go in and these cats are running amok in this Disneyland with things on the wall to climb on and tunnels and little pods on the wall to sleep in and chairs and rugs. And I mean, they're just having the time of their life and there's toys and brushes and balls and But my point is when you go into a shelter environment, these cats are in cages. It's loud. They're scared. You go into a PetSmart Petco, they're in cages. You might be able to take them out and go into a back room, but they're not in their environment. And so these cats and kittens that get to run around and play, and so many times they pick their people. I'll ask an adopter, why did you pick this cat? Well, they just came up to me and just fell right asleep in my lap. Or they came up to me and just wouldn't leave. I mean, it was these cats are able to, I get goosebumps every time I think about this concept because they just get to pick their people. And I don't know, it's just been such a blessing for the people and the cats because it's like, they click, they get this connection, and they know it's going to work.
Since July, have you had a lot of success with adoptions with the lounge?
There have been, I know for a fact, 20 days being open, there were 20 adoptions.
Oh, wow.
Between myself and the other rescue. And then the last I asked the owner, there were 42 adoptions, with half of those being mine. And then the other half, the other rescue. This week, I've had three. It's sometimes an application comes in and I go, oh, an application, because it's like, I just did one of these.
It's a good problem to
have. Man, it's a good problem to have because I got to call the people. I've got to screen the people. It's not just, oh, you want a kitten here. We do a lot of background and we have an extensive 6-page front and back Google form that they have to complete. And, you know, they're probably thinking, man, I don't have to do this much when I apply for my driver's license, but it's all for the safety of the cats. And sadly, you know, I have to tell people no sometimes, but it's been such a blessing.
I have to wonder too, if they're going to like a cat lounge, do you feel like the quality of adopters that have been applying is just like raised the bar a bit?
Yes. Yes. Because first of all, they're paying to go to the lounge. They're paying to go sit in a 30-minute increment or an hour increment. And somebody would go, how much did you pay? But it's really not very much. When she told me how much it was going to be, I thought, you need to raise your prices. But it's been working out. It seems fair to the people. But yes, the quality of the adopter has been raised a little.
I can only imagine, because it takes a very special person to be like, I want to be surrounded by like 10 cats right now.
Yeah. Especially like with like, I imagine at the lounge, like they sell like coffee and drinks. Don't your cats knock over your drinks all the time, Bridget?
Oh, I mean, no, they share them.
Yeah, just like it takes a special person to want to go and have that be done.
Yeah, they have lids on them.
Oh,
if that helps. And she actually does on evenings, it's BYOW, bring your own wine. And they have a cute little bag that you put the wine bottle in so that if it falls over, it doesn't break or spill. And then they have personalized for the lounge plastic wine glasses that you purchase for your night out, and you can bring them back so you don't have to keep purchasing them. But I wish I lived in Austin sometimes, because I would just go to the lounge. I would just want to spend my days at the lounge. It's such a fun place. Such a fun place.
Definitely. So I just went to an adoption event this past weekend, and they had like a little cat room. And it really does show you the different personalities of every cat. Because I think so many people think that all cats have the same personality and they're like aloof or whatever. And it's like, no. When people walked in this room, there'd be one cat that was like, welcome to the room. Like they come up and yeah. So, and then you could see like some cats were going to like curl up in a corner and they're like that vibe. So it really does, I think, highlight their personality so much more, like you said, rather than shelter environments. Or even I feel like when you're in a foster environment and you have to take a cat to a meet and greet, you're like, I swear, he's normally so much more friendly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so difficult. Even when people come over to my home where my cats are, and they come into the room, my cats don't know them. And sometimes they can be a little standoffish. And that kind of gets hard too, versus you go to the lounge and man, people are in there all day long and you never know who you're going to see. And so these cats, they just adjust to new people being around. So that's another benefit of having them in a lounge environment.
Definitely. Now, you've been around for 2 years, which means you're a very specific, ambitious breed of rescuer who is like, pandemic what? I'm going to jump right into this mix, even though the world is upside down and turned around right now. How do you feel like that maybe stood in your way or benefited you?
I don't think anything's really stood in the way. I did have, I guess it was in 2021, because we're in 2022 spring. Yeah. In 2021, early spring, I brought in a adorable little black kitten that I had met somebody to pick up from them because they had found her. And again, I'm learning so much as I go, but I didn't quarantine this little kitten. I brought this little kitten in. It was so cute. It looked healthy. I put him in the kitten room. Let him run around with all the kittens. Well, 3 days later, it's showing signs of illness. A day later, it dies. It had panleukopenia. Panleukopenia is horrible. It's the same as parvo in dogs. Most people know parvo in dogs. They don't know panleukopenia in cats. So I have now infected all the kittens. One by one, they start dying. I didn't know what I know now, but I did what I knew to do and was, of course, getting resources and help from other rescues. But when it was all said and done in a period of 2 months, I lost 13 kittens. And I cried every day because I put everything I had into syringe feeding. I was doing fluids by then. I knew how to do sub-Q fluids. I'm administering medications. I'm just doing everything I can. And then there's another one that dies. And then another one that dies. And that was probably the biggest blow to my rescue. And it would have been so easy to just say, I'm done. I am done. We literally had to pull up carpet, baseboards. We threw everything out that was cloth or anything that couldn't have been sterilized completely, whether it be in the washing machine or sprayed with rescue spray. I would rather go through cancer again than go through panleukopenia again and lose what I lost. It was devastating. Devastating is maybe not even strong enough. It was just so horrible that I, so once that happened, I had to focus, I had to change my focus from helping moms and babies and kittens to adults, because I couldn't bring in any unvaccinated cats or kittens for a year. So that's when I started focusing on owner surrenders, pulling from shelters. I've pulled from shelters in Carthage, Texas, Lufkin, Texas, Corpus Christi, Texas. Of course, our shelters here. So there was a need. There was a need for these older cats to get help. And so that's when I started focusing on that. And then it wasn't until this past spring, maybe like late April or so, I was able to start bringing in some little ones again, which has brought a lot of joy to the rescue, but they are a lot of work. I was reminded how much kittens need because sometimes they don't want to eat and then they start losing weight and then you got to syringe feed them and then you got to give them sub-Q fluids and you got to give them B12. And it's very hard when you have a full-time job and you're trying to monitor these little ones that don't want to eat. And anyway, it can be exhausting. So then I'm like, why am I taking kittens? But they needed help. That's why. So I don't know if I answered the question now that I think about it.
You did, because I think it sounds like a learning curve in a lot of ways and certainly lots of pivots, which I feel like in animal welfare is just, it becomes the norm almost of learning and adapting and growing. And unfortunately, there's still not that handbook. Sydney, we should make it the handbook. What to know when you're starting a rescue.
I know.
Because there's not a one resource to be like, here's some thoughts. I think just a lot of people lead with their heart. And by all means, that will keep you going through the hard times, but it'll also sometimes put you in rough spots as well. Certainly with those that hurt and hurt to grow.
I do know, and I live by this statement that I tell others in rescue who say, you know, I'm sorry that hurt or whatever. And I'll just tell them the day that losing one of these little guys doesn't hurt me, the day that I don't cry over them is the day that I need to get out of rescue, because I cannot become numb. Would it be easier and less painful? Absolutely. But that's where the joy comes in, knowing that you've learned something else that you can use to help another one that you didn't know before. So each loss, as hard as it is still a way to grow and a way to learn so that you have a better ability to help the next one.
Absolutely. Yeah. And certainly, I mean, we all know the state of animal welfare with kittens too. I'm sure you gave them a wonderful space and lots of love, more than a lot of them probably would have been allotted in other organizations or on the streets where they don't have round the clock staff to care for them or different options. The world of kitten rescue is still so hard and has so many obstacles to it. I guess we shouldn't say obstacles, right? Like opportunities. I do want to pivot though and talk about some of the troublemakers that maybe you have surrounding you right now and those that you've had in your home in the past. Because certainly it sounds like you've had quite a few. We want to hear some stories.
Oh, man.
I want to start off, we have to ask you, because we always have like a fun set of questions. And I feel like for me, it's particularly more fun with cats because I feel like they are such troublemakers. They are naughty. So what has been the naughtiest thing a cat has done in your home?
Oh, my goodness. I must say the naughtiest cat that I have at the moment is in his room, because that's where he stays when I'm at work. But his name is Addix, and Addix is somewhat famous on Facebook because Addix does lots of funny things. But Addix was picked up by a constable in one of our precincts here. He was believed to have been thrown out of a car. And so he was picked up by a constable and, of course, put on Facebook. And that's how we do a lot of our networking. And I agreed to take Addix in. He was about 4 months old. Sweet boy. Well, then he started, he came in with mange. I remember that. And so I'm treating him. And his hair just wasn't growing back. And then he started losing his hair. And then he was half bald. And I'm like, what is wrong with you? And then he started getting weird looking teeth. And he's just been a total conundrum of a cat. But personality like nobody's business. He thinks he's a dog. He wants to be up on my shoulder, like facing that way, like a baby. And he just wants me to carry him around. And he cries, but he's so funny. He just, I don't know. It's hard to explain Addix. I have a video of us dancing. I was in the room that he used to stay in and a song came on and he wanted me to hold him. And so I'm just, you know, moving around and we're just dancing and he's loving it. And I put it on Facebook on my page and people just loved it because they can see how much Addix just loved it. And how many cats do you know want to be dancing around with somebody?
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to be one of those hard ones to let go. He just has so much personality. And I guess the only thing he really does that's naughty is he likes to get up on the counter, which what cat doesn't? But he's not very nice to the other cats. He just will go up and start whapping on them. And I'm like, you can't do that, Addix. But he just looks at me like I didn't do anything. He's probably the one that I think about the most. Of course, there's some of them over here getting in trouble on the playpen, climbing on top of it.
If there's one thing they're not supposed to be playing with, that's the one thing they want to. I know.
Yes.
And did his hair ever grow back?
His hair is slightly growing back. There is a breed of cat called a Lycoy, which is also known as the werewolf cat. And I still think he has some Lycoy in him. We did a genetic, one of the, where you send off the, for the breed. And he came back totally not what he is, but there was a 20% marker of unknown. And so when I talked to the company, they said that because their database is data driven, and if the data isn't sent in, then it can't go in their database. So if there's not a lot of Lycoy in the United States, well, then there's not going to be a lot of data to match Lycoy markers. And she said it's possible he could be Lycoy or have it in him, but they don't have enough data in the US to mark those markers, which made sense because she said 20% is really high. To have a 20% unknown on a domesticated cat is kind of unusual. So I'm going to say he's part werewolf cat. And if I could show him to y'all, I would, but he's just precious.
Well, maybe we can post something about him in the show notes here. Another question I like to ask, because it sounds like you've got some good cat names that you've come up with. I feel like, I don't know how you do that, because after my first letter, I was like, I give up. You're all going to be named Cat.
Cat one, Cat two.
What has been your favorite cat name that you've ever used or heard?
Oh, boy. Probably, I really like Peanut. Peanut, because I started calling him Peanut Butter. And it just kind of comes out that way. Peanut Butter, Peanut Butter. Typically, I will name a cat after where I found them or where they came from. So Addicts was thrown out of a car either on I-10 or Highway 6, which is also named Addicts at Summa. So he became Addicts. Gibson was found in an apartment named Gibson. Tara was found at an apartment named Tara. There's usually a connection so that I could help remember where they came from and remember their backstory. But Peanut, I tell you, when he came to me, I really thought I was just going to give him a warm place and a full belly to pass on to the next life, because he was in such bad shape. So, so emaciated and dehydrated and you name it. And I just looked at him that night when he came in and I just said, you know, my little Peanut, you know, it's okay. You're safe now, little Peanut. And that little guy, he turned into a little walnut. And he's he is just the sweetest little thing and had so many people rooting for him. But yeah, probably Peanut has been the most special. It's not so much unusual, but it's just as special because there wasn't any intention behind it. It just kind of came out, my Peanut.
He does look like a little Peanut, though. I feel like it suits him, very much suits him. So we do have a harder question kind of to end things on. Going into this, it is difficult to say, but I know with the work that we do and also with the cleaning we have to do and the poop scooping that we do, you kind of get into your thoughts every now and again. I'm wondering if there's something that you tell yourself over and over to stay inspired, some mantra or quote or something that kind of that keeps you going, basically.
No, it's just a passion in my heart. I get up every day about 3:30. I get up, I take care of the cats, I go to work, I get home about 4. I am usually doing vet visits or what have you. And then I get ready for bed and try to be in bed by 9:30. No matter how tired I am in the morning or the evenings, when I walk into that room that those cats are in, it's about them. I call them all by name and I get down and I greet them. And it's just knowing that they're safe, they're going to be okay, and that they trust me and that I'm their person and that they know that they're going to be okay. I guess those are the things that keep me going, but it's just the passion. Once again, once I don't have that passion or I don't cry when one is hurt, then I need to get out. So I'll be in until then.
We're so glad you are. And honestly, I feel so just grateful and thankful that of your honesty and transparency and everything that you've said. I know you've touched on so many things that other rescuers have gone through as well. And I know there are a lot of people out there who are always casting stones and criticizing others because some of us aren't perfect all the time. So I just really appreciate everything that you've said about the work that you do and now you're doing your best to change animals' lives.
Yeah, my little slogan is saving cats and kittens one meow at a time. That's what we're going to keep striving to do.
Well, it's been so nice. Thank you for chatting with us, and I hope you have a great rest of your day.
Thank you. You too.
It was a genuine honor to really bring Cynthia on to talk about many needs of cat rescuers in Houston. I know it has so many highs and lows, and we're just so grateful that she's put her heart on the line to be able to save these cats. If you want to learn a little bit more about this amazing organization, you can check our show notes or our blog.
And as always, remember to rate, like, and subscribe to this podcast, and be sure to follow Cuddly on all social media accounts at We Love Cuddly. That's CUDDLY. Thanks, guys.